Hello everybody, and thanks for coming, and especially to friends who sort of come to give me support, good friends. I think I'm going to start the talk with a poem, and I haven't timed the talk, so I don't know how long it's going to be. It's not going to be more than an hour. But do feel free to sort of stretch your legs, sort of move about and feel yourself comfortable. And if you want to go out, you know, I'm not going to feel offended. So do go out if you want to. I'll do my best not to feel offended. So the poem is called The Journey and it's by Mary Oliver. It's a rather long poem, but I think it sort of talks about the journey that I have had and I'm having, and maybe some other people's journey. So it says, one day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life. Each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations. Though the melancholy was terrible. It was already late. It was already late enough and a wild night. And the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left the voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world. Determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Okay, so the title of this talk is With Mindfulness Strive On, and I thought maybe I could tell you a bit about how this talk came about. So, Shupa asked me, and if I remember it correctly, it was after my first chapter. The chapter was finished and I was going home. Shupa said, I'll come with you. So we went to the bus stop together and we sort of chatted as a friend would do. And she said to me, are you willing to give a talk about your experience on the ordination retreat, the 3 months ordination retreat, at the Thursday class during the autumn term? And she was extremely kind and considerate in the way she approached me. There was no sort of pushing. And she said to me, you can take as long as you want or as short as time you want to be the sort of the talk. And also she said to me that I could let her know later on, so I didn't have to give her an answer there and then. And my immediate response was, yes, I would like to do that. And I was aware of two parts of me that sort of came up. There was a big part of me that was sort of saying yes. And then at the same time, and the reason it was saying yes, the voice was like, oh, I want to share. I want to share my experience with other people and tell them about what happened. And also there was another part of me, another small part, which was anxious. And it was just a bit hesitant to sort of go along with it. But the overall experience was yes. And I said to her there and then, yes, I like to do it. I like to do it. So here I am, and I've done my best to rise to the occasion. And it hasn't been easy. So I thought maybe we could start with what is mindfulness? And I thought, oh, maybe I could go and search in the literature and find out what mindfulness is, because I found it difficult to come up with a definition myself. So When I went on stage, there were, I came about three sort of very, very good lectures or talks. One of them is one of Bhante's talk, which is on aspects of the high evolution of the individual. And he talks about from alienated awareness to integrated awareness. There's another talk which is about mindfulness in the three trainings, and that's by Tijananda. And the last one is mindfulness for just about everything by Paramabandhu. So I highly recommend these talks. I only got a small sample from one of these talks, and the rest of it is my own stuff. But definitely recommend you to read these if you get time. So, what is mindfulness? In a talk given by Paramabandhu, entitled Mindfulness for Just About Everything, he says that there are two main words that can be used to translate mindfulness, and they can be used simultaneously, but they actually have slightly different meanings. One is sati, and the other one is sampajanya. I've got difficulty saying that. Sampajanya. So he said that sati refers to awareness of the present moment, or bare awareness, but it also has got a meaning. It's got a recollection or a memory. So he says, in other words, you understand what is going on in the present, partly because you can recollect the past, and you can remember what has happened in the past. And then he says that you understand the ethical significance of what it is that you are doing. And then the next bit of it, he says it means the mindfulness of purpose or clear comprehension. So in Satipatthana Sutta, it covers the mindfulness in four main areas, and those are referred as foundations, and it's a mindfulness of body, feelings, mental states, and doctrinal formulation. So I thought the next bit of the talk I can think about, but why mindfulness? I mean, Buddha could have talked about loads of stuff, but he sort of used that as the last words. And I thought, maybe there is something in it. I'm sure there is something in it. So I thought, maybe I could sort of reflect on it and find out what is it for me, rather than again going to the book and say what the book says. Anyway, I went to the book. Not the book, I went to the talk. And it says that in Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha extensively talks about mindfulness. He says, monks, this is a direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of nirvana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. And then I thought, okay, so what about myself? What do I see mindfulness as? And I came up with this. I believe mindfulness could bring my attention to here and now, allowing me to see what is in front of my eyes, to hold the object of my attention fully, realizing that the cycle of death and birth is taking place within it continuously, to see the structure of the object, the observer and the scene instantly and simultaneously. Also remembering that inherently it is not fixed, but it is in constant flow and is insubstantial. Also, mindfulness helps me to break my normal way of perceiving myself and others, which is separate and disconnected. It helps me to close the gap between the subject and object and bring possibility of a new consciousness, a turning about in the subjective and objective poles of my perception, which allows me to see things in one continuous spectrum. So, I thought, after sort of saying what mindfulness is and why mindfulness, maybe we can sort of look at what to be mindful of. And I sort of came up with a list, and this is the list I've made for myself. And I thought, well, to be mindful of oneself. So I'm going to share this. So this is this section of the talk is going to be a combination of my experiences on the retreat. So I sort of say what I'm going to be mindful of, and then I'm going to try to give an experience of how I did that on the retreat and what it meant for me. Sort of try to bring it alive a bit. So during the retreat, I had the opportunity of becoming more familiar with different aspects of myself, consisting of my mind, body, thoughts, emotions, feelings, behavior, and intentions. I guess I did that by using familiar tools which work for me, such as keeping a dream journal, using focusing technique, writing using dominant and non-dominant hand, sounding and chanting. So I want to talk about keeping the dream journal, start with that. And I'm going to tell you about a dream that I had before going on the retreat. So I went on a retreat, it was in April, and a few weeks before that I had this dream. And in the dream, I'm going to sort of mention Attila. And for people who don't know Attila, he is one of the senior order members. He's been ordained for decades. And also, I see him as my therapist. So that's the name related to. So the dream says, a few weeks before going away on my ordination retreat, I had a dream. In this dream, I was in an unknown car, sitting in the driver's seat, and the car was going downhill. It was dark, like night. I didn't know the place. I tried to stop the car by pressing the brake as hard as possible and as far as it possibly could go, but the car didn't stop. I woke up, and despite the frightening scene, I had a good feeling about the dream. I went to see Attila a couple of weeks later. I told him of my dream, and he said, well, it's good that you were in the driving seat. Life driving into the unconscious, and I agreed. So the reason I told you about this dream is to do of sort of remembering the dream when I was on the retreat. So that was before the retreat started. I had this dream, and then I went on retreat, and it was a 3-month retreat, and about a month or so in the retreat, things got really, really tough. And that was before my sort of ordination, before the ordination taking place. And the way I was experiencing myself during that period was like being in a pressure cooker. And the pressure was sort of getting higher and higher and higher. And then it was going on like that for a while. And then the pressure would release. And then there would be a period of sort of peace and quietness. And then the cycle would start again. And I remember that dream during that period. And when I thought about it, it was just like, it came up. And then suddenly I thought, oh, now I understand that dream. I know what it means. And it was like that. It was just like a part of me was coming up. And by coming up, it was talking about sort of my identity with my family, with my sort of background as being a Muslim, but not wanting to leave my sort of culture. And that's the way I sort of understood it, but that part of me understood it in that way. And so that was happening. And then at the same time, there was another bit of me which was sort of quite solid and wanted to sort of continue with the whole process. And it was like I was just sort of seeing all that happening, and at the same time, I couldn't stop it, or I didn't want to stop it, or it was just I was an observer. And that's the reason I just suddenly felt, oh yeah, it was that car. I was in that car and it was going down. I just couldn't stop the car and I couldn't stop the process. And that's the way it sort of felt for me at the time. So that's the reason I mentioned this dream. Then another dream that sort of I want to tell you about is related to Green Tara. Well, when people go for ordination, as part of the ordination, they sort of decide what sort of figure, what practice they want to take on to sort of use to further their sort of spiritual journey, or they have the sort of connection with that figure. And before going away, I was sort of thinking of Green Tara. And the way Green Tara sort of came about for me was not because I thought, oh, you know, she's sort of pretty, she's to do with compassion, and you know, yeah, that's the one to go for. It wasn't like that. It was just like I was struggling so badly, and I was stuck in a place that I couldn't get out from that space. And I remember that I was sort of sitting in my room, sort of doing meditation, doing chanting, and then I started sort of chanting Green Tara mantra. And then suddenly after I finished the chanting, I had this sort of sense of whiteness in the room, and it was so calming and nourishing. And that was the start of the connection with Green Tara for me. So that sort of continued, and each time I sat down, I thought, well, you know, I don't have a choice. I have to sort of ask her for help, and I have to connect with her. So anyway, so when I was on the retreat, we would do stuff, and then there would be a day or something that we had a bit of a space, a sort of easier day. And I remember on that day, I was sort of sitting and having breakfast, and we weren't ordained yet. And so we were talking between us, myself and Shraddhasara and Shraddhasiddhi. And they were asking me if I had chosen a figure. And I did tell them, well, sort of, but I'm not sure, you know. And the way I describe Green Tara, I mean, I'm ashamed to say that, but I sort of say, oh, she's common, and she's lovely, and everyone's got her, you know. And it was so funny. They sort of looked at me, and they said to me, but why are you going for her? If that's what you see here, why are you doing this? And what happened? I think inside me, I knew I had to go for her, but with the rational mind, wasn't in work. You know, I wasn't going with the rational. I was going with what was feeling right inside. But that conversation sort of started me to sort of use my rational mind again, and I started sort of questioning it. So I started sort of questioning, oh, what should I do? This one or that one? Da, 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 da. And then I had this dream. So I'm just going to read the dream as I had sort of written it there. I haven't corrected or anything. So. This is a dream number 25. When I was on the retreat, we didn't know the dates. We didn't know the days either. So that was quite interesting, you know. So that's the written dream number 25. I woke up in the middle of night, not gently, but I jumped and I sat in my bed, frightened of something. I thought something is there, not sure, maybe there was a child. I went back to sleep, and I was trying to sort of go back to sleep, but at the same time I was aware of this sort of, oh, there's something in the room, and I felt, oh, it looks like a skeleton or something. But anyway, eventually I went to sleep. And then I woke up and I've written this dream in the morning. Then I remember this dream. I'm in an unknown place. It is like two faces of a rock, and one face, so it was like I'm in the middle, and on two sides is the rock, so one rock there and one rock here. But somehow it was two faces of the same rock, and I'm in the middle. And it felt like that sort of one side is the east and one side is the west. And there was a woman, there is a woman who's telling me the name of these two faces of the rock. And she's writing a name, and the name was three words. And the name sounded like Sanskrit, so she's written it, and at the same time she's saying it. But I couldn't read it. It wasn't English, or it wasn't Farsi. So the only word that came to my mind was like Sanskrit. So anyway, in the dream, I thought that was Green Tara, and I had a sense of the Green Tara, and then I woke up. So anyway, I had this dream, and then after this dream, it was very, very clear for me that I have to go with my sort of intuition and what felt right for me rather than my rational mind. Okay. So the next bit, I want to talk about using the right and the left, the dominant and non-dominant hand. And this is a bit embarrassing. For many years, well, I've seen Atala for about 7 years now. And all this time, all this time that I've seen him, there is a sort of, it looks like there's a common thread coming up, something is coming up for me. And that is to do with a sense of a place in me, or a voice in me, or something in me, which has got a masculine quality. And it feels like, you know, he wants to get to know me, and I don't want to get to know him. So it's been that relationship. And over years, I sort of learned how to sort of turn toward that side of me that wants my attention. And one way of doing that is sort of using my right hand to sort of ask him question or have a conversation with him, and using the left hand as he's talking to me and write down what he says. So I'm just going to read you what I've written, and that is a conversation that I had with this man. So I might sound quite sort of mad here, but anyway, I've taken the risk and say it. So, hello, the man in my dream. And I had a dream as well, and in that dream there was a sense of he was there, and he gave me a bunch of flowers. So, hello, the man in my dream who gave me those beautiful flowers. Will you talk to me? I'm struggling to hold myself in the group and take my space and place. So this is me talking, and the next bit is he's talking. Yes, keep going. You are doing fine. I'm supporting you. Look inside. There is beauty. Beautiful rose. The space you look into is alive. Look into it. There is a relief in it. Breathe in life. Something big, something bigger you can touch. You can feel it. It is alive. Okay. So mindfulness of oneself. And then I thought the next bit, mindfulness of others. And the first thing that came up for me was my friendship with Shradasara, ex-Joe Brown. Myself, Shradasara, and Shradasiddhi, we were in the same GFR group. And luckily, we got invitation to go on the ordination together. And we shared a room together. Shradasiddhi sort of camped mostly, but she was in the same room. And also there was someone else, Amala Siri as well. She's a Spanish lady and she's in Spain now. But with Shradasara, definitely it feels like I sort of started a connection many, many years ago. Then we sort of lost touch, and then we reconnected again. And then on the retreat, we sort of managed to sort of be there for each other. There were times that it just felt like I couldn't do it by myself. I couldn't go any further. And a part of me felt like, ooh, I want many connections. I want to sort of have loads of friends. I'm lonely here. I have only one friend. And it was very clear that each time I went for a walk with her, by the end of it, it was quite clear, crystal clear, that what I was after was sort of deep connection. It was a deep intimacy that I wanted, and not the superficial layering. So that's the first thing that I want to sort of talk, I want to sort of mention friendship and connection. And sort of, it doesn't come about easy, and we have to work on it. But when we do work on it, it pays off. And when it shows itself, it's just so beautiful. And in relation to that, one of the most beautiful moments of the retreat was the public ordination. And during the public ordination, I was sitting close to Shravasara. And it was just like, the first person who got ordained, it was Shradasiddhi. I think it was Shradasiddhi. And I think Shradasara was the last one. And it was just so beautiful to sort of see her going and getting ordained. And I never felt, I think that was one of the things that really struck me, was just how much I sort of felt the beauty and how much I felt touched by seeing my friend is going forth. I was not surprised. I was not surprised to see that, because I think usually I put myself that, oh, I can't connect. I can't connect and see things in people. And that proved me wrong. That proved me wrong. Okay. The next thing that I wanted sort of read to you is about relating to the group. I was on that retreat with another 14 women. We were stuck in a mountain together for 3 months. And you sort of, you sort of get to know each other. You sort of know if you like each other, you don't like each other. It's very straightforward in a way. And at the same time, the task is to sort of work at it. Work at it with sort of honestly and truth. And at the same time, find out what it is. What is it underneath it that makes one to struggle? So this bit is to do with the rota. We used to get the rota, a work rota, and the idea was like we could work it between us what we're going to put our name on and sort it out. And by then, this incident was about a good 2 months in the retreat, and the idea was by then we sort of knew each other well enough to work together. So what happened? The rota went up. And the rota would go on for like about 2 weeks or so, or 3 weeks or whatever. We didn't know the length of it. And I was aware that I saw the rota, and I went, and I put my name on it. And there were two ladies on the retreat who had physical health problems, as well as myself. So anyway, I went and I did that. Then I went to wash my clothes. So I'm washing my clothes, and this is happening to me in my mind, what's going on. So I'm written, I was washing, aware of, a part of me feeling guilty for having signed up so quickly and gone for what I want. This part felt very anxious, done something wrong, thinking it's going to be told off. So that's one extreme view, one extreme voice. Then the other part was saying, well, it is okay, you have done what is good for you, and if there is any problem or anybody wants to change, so that they would tell you and, you would sort of swap. So that's another extreme, I thought. And then the next thing came up was the third way. The third way, maybe openly, I could have asked them and checked with them. I could have brought my needs into the table, and I could have voiced and requested. And I think that was it. I was struggling a bit, but I was struggling a lot. How to bring myself in and ask, rather than just like going and do it, and then the small part of me sort of feeling anxious about it. And I became aware of that. I became aware of like, there is another way. There is another way of doing it. And this sort of new way of coming up and talking or doing, I think it just came about because on some level, we were left with this stuff. And on some level, the sort of the container or this pressure cooker would expand. And then when it was sort of expanded, well, that's the way I saw it, when it was expanded, something else would come in, something else from somewhere else, from a bigger place would come in. And my job was to sort of be receptive enough to sort of receive it and get it. and not lose sight. Yeah, so I thought maybe that would be an example for how to be mindful of others, two examples. Then I thought about environment, and that's the reason I put these feathers and the stones here. One of the things that sort of kept my sanity when I was away there was the environment, was going on walks and getting connected more and more and more with my surrounding. And it's not something that I sort of just learned to do it there. It was something that I used to do when I was a child. And I think I was sort of put in an environment that felt so natural to me. And what I used to do, it just came up so naturally and quickly. So I tried to go on walks nearly every other day, and sometimes I couldn't do that, so I went every sort of 4 days or something. And one of the things I used to do was just sort of look and see what's there. And the first walk that I went with, and that was a walk with a couple of order members, and they wanted to show us, that was the first walk, I think it was the second week. They wanted to show us the sort of the area, because we could have got lost easily. So we went along as a party, and what happened? We were walking, and I sort of love to look around. I'm not sort of just go and do. I sort of look around and see what can find. And that's the first feather that I found, and the feather is from a vulture. So we had loads of vultures there, and I sort of looked and I picked these. And I was so excited. I was thinking, you know, I found a feather. And I think the other reason I was so excited is because the last 2-3 years, somehow I've been sort of fascinated by feathers, and I collect feathers. And I don't know why I do it, but I do it, and I just go for it. So, and I thought, well, I just want to see it. And if you do feel moved and you want to sort of, you come and touch it at the end of the talk. Yeah, and the other things was like this one. I don't know what bird this fairies belong to. Maybe blackbird, I don't know. But one day I was coming from the shrine room to the retreat center, and on the way, suddenly I saw this sort of bunch of black feather just drop there. And my first instance was just, my first response was, wow, feathers, and gorgeous. They were just gorgeous. And I sort of bent and I touched them, and it just so soft. And then at the same time, I just felt, oh, poor thing. Poor thing. And it was just like, I couldn't sort of feel that the bird sort of just lost the feather. I couldn't feel that way. And I just thought, oh, maybe it's been killed. And I just felt, how is it possible to hold beauty and sadness together at the same time? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was so touched, and I was so moved by it. And so I touched it, and I wanted to take one. And I didn't let myself do that. And I think something in me was sure that it's not going to go away, it's going to be there. And I think on another occasion, I sort of picked a few. And I was still aware of sort of possible death here. And then I think I was trying to sort of think about the bird and think about how can I go about that? Maybe doing Vajrasattva mantra, you know, something on those lines. Eventually, I took some with me and I brought it with me. So yeah, you know, we talk about nature. And we see the beauty, but at the same time, you know, it's a giver and it's a taker as well, you know, both together. And if you could sort of be with that and live with them. And I struggle not to stay with death. Yeah. I want to say about this one. This is definitely a vulture, definitely. And the reason this is important to me is on one occasion I had a very, very difficult experience. I don't know, was it during... Yeah, it was during the meditation. I was trying to sort of go deeper and give metta to the young part of me. And then some memory came up. And as part of that, I just felt that, oh, I couldn't share that memory with people on the retreat. I couldn't share it with anyone. So what I did, I sort of took myself out of the retreat center and I went along towards the shrine room. And then on the way, there was a rupa, there was a Padmasambhava rupa, a beautiful one. And I just felt, oh, I'll just sit next to Padmasambhava. And so I sat there and I had a good cry. I had a very, very good cry. And then, you know, I sat there for a little while and then I decided, actually, I do want to talk to somebody about it. And the reason I decided to do that, because I thought that was a turning point to bring myself in rather than take myself out. And I thought that I could do that. I was at a place that I could do that. I could do something differently. But when I stopped crying and when I did all that, I sort of looked to the side, sort of looked around to the side, you know, sort of come back to normality. And I saw this feather there. And I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it that I've got a water feather here on the sort of retreat center premises. And I just kept thinking before that I have to go on a walk, I have to go on a long walk, I have to go to the top in order to find some feathers. And then here it was, a feather for me. And I found it as a result of something painful in a way. You know, what took me there? Because I was sad. And the coincidence was quite an irony for me. So I just wanted to sort of tell you about it.
Okay, so we've done the environment. And I thought maybe we could talk about awareness or mindfulness of the unconditioned as well. Or mindfulness of the transcendental. And I just want to talk again of my own experience, what I think it might be, you know. So in this experience, I had a meditation and came out of the meditation center. Bye-bye. Came out of the meditation room. I went to sort of the ground and I was sort of walking about. It was a Spain, sort of sunny day every day. Gorgeous wind was sort of coming and going. And I sat down and I look at these sort of... I'm looking. And there's a grass moving. And at the same time, the shadow. And I feel the heat. And in that moment, it just felt like I saw that movement there and then. And what I saw, it was that movement there and then. And that movement wasn't going to be repeated again. And it was just unique. And it was just mind-blowing. It was just mind-blowing to see it like that. And it felt like I'm seeing it with new eyes. It felt completely different. It was just amazing. It was just awesome experience. And the way it affected me was like when I went back to the shrine room after that for a while. When I was in the shrine room, for example, and tried to meditate, and I would hear birds outside singing. The way I would perceive it, it was just like, this is it, and I'm not gonna. The thing I'm gonna hear next is not the same, and that is it. That is just a sound there and then, and the next sound is unique, but it's separate and it's different to this. And I was aware that sort of was happening naturally. And after a while, I had to sort of remind myself. And I thought, oh, you know, this is the definition of mindfulness, that it's just like something happened, we become aware of it, and then somehow we forget. And then we have to remind ourselves again, you know, how it can be done differently. So I put that one as an example on the sort of unconditioned, sort of experiencing the unconditioned, or something bigger.
Another experience that I had was I went for a walk one day. I used to go for my walks in the morning because it was getting really, really hot and you couldn't do walks in the afternoon. So I used to go after meditation. And I was quite miserable on this walk. I was very, very upset and sort of down and just feeling, God, you know, just want to get out of here. So that sort of sense of like feeling so disconnected. And that was it. I was struggling to connect with myself. And when I couldn't connect with myself, the same way I was relating to other people, and that used to make it hard. Anyway, I've gone on this walk, and I sort of managed to get to sort of high place on the sort of rocky road towards the sort of top. And I found this gorgeous rock. And what I used to do, I used to go to this place and I used to sit down. So it was a familiar place to me. It was one of my favorite. So anyway, on this day, I went to this rock. And I sat there, I sat on top of it. And the way it was, if you sat on top of the rock, then the next bit was just down. And if something happened, then that was it. That was the end, sort of. But the way, the sensation and the feel of it was just so expansive. Anyway, I went there, I sat there. And I sort of closed my eyes. And I was just reciting Green Tara mantra. And I think that was it, you know, I just knew that, you know, I have to call on her again. And I couldn't do it by myself, I needed to ask for help. So I'm reciting Green Tara mantra, and I'm just, by then I'm crying, tears coming down my face. And it's gone for a while, and I opened my eyes, and suddenly in front of me, which was like a very high place, there was this bird, a very small bird, you know, and they were just like, singing. And as I opened my eyes and I saw this bird, it just felt the whole thing, the whole experience that I had, it was so absurd in a way that what was real, it was that moment of me seeing the bird. Nothing before it and nothing after it, but just that moment of seeing the bird. And as a result of that, I just felt this is absurd. The whole thing is absurd. And it was just like, forget about all that, it's here and now, that's it, it's here and now, this moment, this just second. That was moving. I cried more, because I was so delighted. But that was a different reason for crying. But that was awesome. I want to tell you another example about the unconditioned. And I sort of talked about one of the difficulties I had prior to ordination was to do with my family and the sense of separation and sense of like, you know, I'm not loyal to them, I'm going to leave them behind. That was the sense was going on. The small part was saying that. And this dream... this experience is after the ordination. So I had this experience during my meditation, one of the meditations that I had. So I'm just going to read it to you. So I'm written that I had this experience prior to the public ordination, so I've just been ordained privately. And I've written, I'm aware of something in me standing upright and tall. Something in me is having the confidence to go in different way to my sisters and my family. Yet, I had such a soft, immense love and care for them, coming out of nowhere during my meditation, which could have only come through from the bigger place in me. Such a soft, deep love for them, which definitely was not from a separated sense, yet not being one with them, something much deeper. The word Amitabha love comes to my mind to describe the soft, yet so deep love for them. I felt so relaxed in that so deeply. It is amazing. So that sort of really reassured me about all my doubts and what was going on for me. That, you know, I'm heading in the right direction, sort of. So, getting to the end of it, sort of. I've written in conclusion, I would like to revisit where I started from tonight. With mindfulness, strive on. All conditioned things are impermanent. I vaguely understand this with my rational mind, but I believe the task is to really know this in my heart. The task is to have faith and to accumulate these experiences, internalize them, remember and revisit them repeatedly with a spacious, non-grasping, generous and confident attitude. In this way, I keep them alive in my being, and hopefully I'm able to see things as they really are, impermanent but yet pregnant with infinite possibilities. I also need to remind myself that this enormous task is not achievable if I don't have the blessing and wisdom of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas on and at my side. So I just want to finish the talk with a poem. And the reason I want to read this poem is because what I was saying about my walks and how the environment supported me. And the analogy that the rock has for me, that it endures. And I just feel that all this time, when I was up there for 3 months, I had to endure. And I guess that's the way I see the spiritual life, that we have to endure what's going on, and something else will come through. But the task is endurance with, not blind endurance, with sort of clear understanding and clear mindfulness. So I'm just going to finish it with this. Rock, there is a stone in me that knows a stone, substance of rock that remembers the unending simplicity of rest. While a scorching sun, suns and ice ages pass over rock face swiftly as days. In the longest time of all come the rock's changes, the slowest of all rhythms, the pulsations that raises from the planet's core the mountain ranges and weather them down to sand on the seafloor. Remains in me records of rock's duration. My ephemeral substance was still in the veins of the earth from the beginning. Patient for its release, not questioning when will come the flowering, the flowing, the pulsing, the awakening, the taking wing, the long, long for night of the bridegroom's coming. There is a stone in me that knows a stone, whose sole state is a stasis, while the slow cycle of the stars wheels a world of rock through large years, where in nightmare of full crying, must I travel fathomless distance forever and ever? All that is in me of the rock replies, forever, if it must be, and be still, endure. Thank you.